you are an addict and you are struggling, you are not alone. You are not alone.
If you want to understand addiction, you can't look at what's wrong with the addiction. You have to look at what's right about it.
And that's the thing about addicts. We either focus on getting high or we focus on these three principles. It's that simple. Focus on the thing that kills us or focus on the thing that saves us.
That's where the real question in addiction is not why the addiction, but why the pain.
Addicts aren't like everybody else. We use all the time or we can't use it all. So we have to do recovery the same way, every single day.
My definition of addiction is any behavior that gives you temporary relief, temporary pleasure, but in the long term causes harm, has some negative consequences, and you can't give it up despite those negative consequences.
And when I got clean, they told me there were three principles that were so important, if I didn't practice them on a daily basis, I wouldn't live. They told me I had to practice rigorous authenticity, I had to surrender the outcome, and I had to do uncomfortable work.
And that's gonna be the intro
to
this new episode of The Everyday Addict. I'm your man, Chris White.
What's going on?
What's up, brother? Tell the people who you are, man.
Ed Manderson, y'all.
Ed Manderson. Now, we're back here at the Underground for this follow-up episode to The Everyday Addict. We had a lot of feedback and great success with the first episode, and I said, man, we have to revisit this. We have to make this every week. I need to make this an everyday occurrence, but weekly,
I can live
with that. But, you know, we both work. We both have things that we do have to do. We're both fathers. We got a lot of shit on the plate. So,
absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? That's just a part of what it is. And so we run with it from that point. So before we even get this started, I got to do something. I got to give a trigger warning.
All right.
Because we're about to talk about some shit. And this might be triggering for some people. So I have to give out a pregame warning to let everybody know we're about to talk about addiction. We're about to talk about recovery. We're about to talk about some things that might bring up some...
Some feelings. Some
way
urges,
to catch that.
Exactly. Some urges, some itches.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not that we're doing it intentionally, but hopefully in some way, in some respect, this could be helpful to someone, and someone who might be in need might need Ed or myself as a resource.
There you go.
We both work in the addiction treatment arena, and so our objective is not only to inform and to educate, but to also be a resource if you need it.
Right.
So you can follow us on The Everyday Addict on Twitter, The Everyday Addict on Facebook, and on Instagram, it's The Everyday Addict.
There it is.
So website coming soon. Right now we're building content. You know what I'm saying? And we're going to have some crazy ass guests on here.
Exactly. I know last time when we ended, we promised people we'd have some guests.
Yeah,
but we look, did. It didn't work out this week. I might have been a little lazy on getting that together.
It's
but
all good.
It's going to happen, though. It's going to happen.
It's all good, man. So, man, what's been up with you, man?
Yeah, shit, man. That chicken sandwich is sitting a little heavy right
listen,
now, bro.
Listen, we just had lunch at the Birdhouse.
Yeah.
Ka-ka!
You go hit me with the St. Louis ka-ka, the Missouri.
That chicken.
Gotcha. And mine was, I guess I got the flame, the hot, the super hot, and it had me sweating over here.
Bro, I thought you could handle heat, man.
Man, I thought I could handle heat too, but this was different. So I had to wash that down with a couple of bottles of Coke, and I'm trying to leave the Coke alone.
Right. I know. Now I feel like I'm diabetic too, man.
Right. I'm trying to wean myself off of everything, man. The crazy part about what I just said is I tell people all the time that we all have addictions.
Right.
Everybody on this damn planet is addicted to something.
Oh yeah.
So most people don't look at sugar it's an addiction. And it's the worst thing
it is
to
for
be
me,
addicted
man.
To.
Bluebell ice cream is that's now my vice.
That's your drug of choice?
That's my drug of choice now, man. I eat a pint of Bluebell almost every day.
What? Damn. Man, you rail thin.
I don't know, bro.
If, listen, for look, everybody that can't see it, it is about 6'5", 6'6", maybe 185, 90 pounds. If he told me he was 200 pounds, I wouldn't believe him.
No, I haven't been 200 pounds in a long time.
Damn, I wish I could say that.
Well, shit. Dude, hey, don't pick up a coke habit, though, because that's how I lost a lot of weight, and I'm still haven't put it back on.
I'm not trying to pick up the coke habit.
All right. I'm just saying it's a good way to lose weight, but also a good way to lose a lot of other shit, too.
Listen, cocaine is not a good way to lose weight.
No.
That's a byproduct of the drug. But I can dig where you're coming from.
That's all I'm saying, man.
Oh, man, that's
good
crazy.
Way to lose a bank account and a lot of money.
Yeah, okay, speaking of that, you're not only going to lose weight.
You're going to lose your money, your job, your car, your apartment, maybe end up in jail. Who knows? You might.
You're going to lose your girl?
Yep. Yep.
You're going to lose everything else
that comes. If you get a girl with one, yeah.
You're going to get something and you're going to lose something.
Exactly.
You're
going to
get a temporary high.
Yep.
And then you're going to lose everything in the process of chasing that high.
Exactly.
Hey, listen. And this is how real life everything is. So if you hear Ed just have to black out for a minute, it's because he's a busy person. He's got clients that are calling in that are in need of his services. He needs to be able to intervene on their behalf and to get them into treatment. So if I black out and you don't hear from me and Ed keeps talking, that's because I had to answer a call, okay? That means I'm trying to save a life. That means I'm trying to make sure that I have everything in order to make sure that I can get this person placed where they need to be.
Right.
So we were talking about this addiction to sugar. And I'm joking, but that's very serious.
Oh, man. Like, I cannot. Look, before you got here, you asked if I'd eaten. I had a piece of carrot cake from upstairs before you got here.
You ate carrot cake from the?
Yeah, before we even ate lunch.
Gotcha.
Like, sugar is now, that's my vice.
Damn. That's almost worse than the drugs. Because I know this for a fact. Cocaine can be out of your system within 72 hours.
Yeah.
Sugar will stay in your system for what? If you're trying to wean yourself off, what, 4 to 6 weeks?
I don't even know. All I know is that I heard another podcast, Joe Rogan's podcast. I was listening to, I think it was an episode of that. But anyways, he was talking about, you know, how important diet is for you and how bad sugar is for you in the long run. I mean, man, like artificial sugar fucks your shit up bad.
It does. The granulated sugar?
Yeah.
The
Cokes and the
shit. But see, that's not even real sugar. That's high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
That's worse. That's like liquid cocaine. The granulated cocaine that comes in the 4-pound bag. it's in everything.
Yeah.
And as soon as you try to stop, you start tweaking in a totally different way. You start snapping at people. You're easily agitated.
You
don't sleep well. You're gonna lose weight because that sugar and salt, it all adds weight to your bottom line at the end of the day. And that's always been crazy to me, that what people do is trade one addiction or process disorder for another.
Right.
And I used to always wonder why when people go into treatment, they're getting rid of an addiction. But in that process, they pick up smoking.
Yeah.
Now, cigarettes will kill you over a period of time. The nicotine, the tobacco will kill you.
Right.
But it's legal.
Yep.
It's FDA approved. Just like alcohol.
Yeah.
But it will kill you.
Yeah.
And we were just on the subject of DWIs and DUIs.
Right.
And the difference between Texas and Georgia.
Yeah.
And in Texas, it's DWI, driving while intoxicated, but they also have a DUI. Driving under the influence. So you were saying that in Georgia
I think it's just DUIs. And that's what I got.
So it's just driving under the influence.
Right. That's what I got when I was, you know, in college. I got a DUI.
One DUI.
And I deserved it. That's for sure. I deserved it. I think we talked about it on the first episode. I deserved it.
I do. You remember were telling me the story about telling the friends, get out, get the fuck out, go go do whatever you got to do. I'll just take the hit.
My car, get back to my house. I'm, you know, this is on me.
That's some real stand-up shit, though.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. Shit. I've done some things that weren't that stand-up, too. Trust me, as the addiction developed, man, I got less and less stand-up, I guess. But, you know, and I wasn't standing up very long that night. You know, I ended up...
Yeah.
I think my BAC when they took it at the jail was like a 0.2 something, like 0.24, what, something like that.
What's the... What was the legal limit at the time? Like
0.08? Yeah. So once you hit 0.08, you are over the legal limit, I think. Yeah.
And you had a 2?
A 0.24.
Wait a minute. So 0.08 and you had a 0.2.
Yeah, something. 0.24, yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. You were like fucked up.
Oh, there's no half measures when it came to my drinking, man.
So this was during the stage of just alcohol?
Pretty much. Alcohol and weed at that point, yeah.
Alcohol and weed.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure during that time there was somebody in town just growing copious amounts of great weed.
Yeah, I mean, it was a college town, and, you know, wherever it came in from or wherever it was, yeah, we always had it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You know, I'm starting to see where there are more treatment centers that are opening up that cater to individuals that are addicted to marijuana.
Right.
And most people will tell you, man, you can't be addicted to marijuana. And I'm like, you're out of your damn mind.
Right. What's that line from Half-Baked?
Half-Baked.
You in here for some marijuana?
You're addicted to weed?
Yeah.
Weed ain't no drug.
Right.
And it's like, you ever suck dick for weed?
Right.
Like, no, I done suck dick for coke. I synced them. You know, I'm like, what the? That was one of the funniest scenes ever.
Right.
And, you know, throughout, if you've never seen the movie Half-Baked, you have to see it. It's with Dave Chappelle and his crew, and all they do is get high all day.
All day.
What used to be like that, man? You had a Wesley Pipes?
We used to make pipes and bongs and all that shit.
You used to make pipes and bongs. Yeah. What's the craziest thing you made a pipe out of?
So we had a bong that we called Barely Moving. And this is some white people shit, but you know, Grateful Dead had the bears, the dancing bears.
Yeah.
So we got a 5-gallon water jug. And we put the Grateful Dead dancing bears all over it, and we called it Barely Moving. And, you know, we hollowed out the top and put a – what did we use for the slide? Anyways, we made a big 5-gallon bong with, you know, 5 hoses coming out of it and all that, and called it Barely Moving, and we go sit in a buddy's garage. And
So the five – see, because I'm green as hell.
All right.
I'm green as hell. So the 5 hoses coming out was like a hookah.
It was a hookah. It was like a water bong hookah type deal.
Okay. I'm not green in the sense that, okay, I've never smoked anything, but I've never... See, Ed hit it on the head. He said at the beginning, this was some white boy shit.
Yeah, this is white people. Like, this is boarding school, white people, you know, white kids in boarding school with... Yeah.
This is something that always cracked me up, even when I was in college, right? So I go to college in a Midwest town. I'm in Iowa. And I realized something was distinctly different because the brothers always smoke either blunts or Phillies or joints.
Right.
But all my white boyfriends, all my white friends, they never smoked the joint or blunt. They would smoke bongs and pinch off weed. And I never knew what the fuck a bong was.
See, we used to roll joints too.
Your crew used to roll joints.
Yeah.
You from Houston, man. You different. You cut different. So these cats would blow my mind because I said, what the fuck is a bong? And they just take the weed, they pinch it off, put it in this little bowl, yep, and then light it up, and then this water shit would be in the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you getting high for this? And then I realized, you get higher.
Oh, yeah.
Off of this shit, because some of them would put alcohol, like vodka, like some cheap-ass pop-off or... What's the
taco? All that shit. Yeah.
Put it in there, and then they would drink it. And I'm like,
hell no, we never drank the bong water. But
you never drank the bong water?
Hell no, that shit would get you sick, man.
Bro, they used to drink this stuff, and I'm like, y'all trying to get too fucking high.
Yeah.
And I never knew what a bong was until when I tried it. It's like somebody kicked me in the chest with 2 feet.
Yeah.
I'd never felt this before. I thought my lungs was gonna explode, man.
And I'm like,
damn. You remember that scene on Half Baked when they first smoked the weed that he got from
Samson?
and he was coughing like he was gonna cough up a lung.
Right.
And I'm like, wait, is this what Method Man means when he says the iron lung? I'm trying to understand, because I'm like, okay, I don't want to do that shit no more.
Bro, we used to have a bong in the center console of my roommate's car senior year of high school.
In the center console?
Yeah, and we'd just be driving around and open up the center console, take a bong rip. Yeah. Hey. Boarding school kids, boarding school kids up in New England, man, get creative when it comes to smoking the weed.
That is, see, black people got too many different fears driving around with some shit.
We make bongs out of like apples, oranges, you know, watermelon.
That's something that happened in the movie.
Yeah.
What was the Baldwin? What's the Baldwin kid name?
Oh, it's so many Billy of them. Baldwin or whatever.
He's like, look, bro.
The MacGyver smoker.
Give me an apple, give me a toilet paper roll, and a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Trust me, I made bongs with less.
Yep.
And I'm like, really? You gonna burrow a hole in an apple and smoke it?
Yeah.
Does it give you an apple taste?
No, not really.
It's just the fact that you got something.
Shit, we made a pipe once with a honeydew melon in my mom's kitchen once.
Was your mom home?
Hell no.
Did she find the melon? Did y'all leave the evidence?
No. She was gone out of town for a while. I love you, Mom. I'm sorry.
See?
We smoked weed in your kitchen, but I think you already know that. So.
Okay, this goes out to white parents. Do not leave your kids at home by themselves. They're creative little monster fuckers, and they would do some shit that would make you say, what the hell happened to my fruit?
Right.
I'm just playing. Leave your kids at home. Just not with Ed.
Back in the day. Not with old Ed. Young Ed, I should say.
So now we were talking about this, and we're talking about when you were a kid.
Right.
But we both have kids. We have teenagers. Do you ever have a fear that something would trigger and the kids might decide to try some shit? Because it's everywhere.
Yeah. It, like, so, you know, my son, he lives with his mom, and he's going to be 14 this year. So I don't see him as much as I like. But, yeah, now that he's at that age, hell yeah. Look, when I was in high school, because I think you and I are, a few years apart?
Right.
So I remember in high school, like, we drank beer and we smoked weed, and that was about it.
Yeah, you were getting lit then. That was lit.
Exactly. And, like, if you were smoking weed, like, that was about as extreme as it got. It wasn't, you know, but now what's out there, dude, bath salts, all that crazy stuff, like, the stuff that kids do to get high and, like, the stuff I've seen kids come in on.
Yeah.
Like... And when I was working at a outpatient facility in sober living, we had a kid come in who would, you know, in like the DM cough syrups, they put that ball in there to keep it fresh or whatever.
Yeah.
He would crack that open and smoke whatever was inside of it. And that was how he was getting high.
Really?
Yeah. And like, dude, the synthetics and all that stuff, man, like that shit fucking terrifies me. And hell yeah, it scares the hell out of me that my son might, because he's got my genes, you know what I mean? Like, so he's got my genes, and, you know, I'll just put it out there. Like, his mom and I, we were never married, and we didn't get along, you know. So gotcha. He didn't have an easy,
you know, path, right.
Yeah, you know, he didn't have a traditional family atmosphere growing up and all that. So, shit, yeah, I mean, it scares the hell out of me, what, you know.
I'm really afraid of all of the influences, and as much as I want to safeguard my two from the outside world, you really can't.
No,
all you can do is really try to educate them on the hazards of what's out there, because if someone wants to really try some shit, they're gonna do it.
Yep.
And
that was me. My mom, you know, I was safeguarded, like, you know, my mom tried to safeguard me against all that stuff, and then she also tried, you know, when she saw that I was starting to, you know, try beer and all that stuff, she tried the other approach. Well, okay, like, you know, as long as it's in a safe, controlled atmosphere, you know,
right.
It didn't matter. I was going to do it eventually, one way or another.
Right.
You know?
Wow. Now, I think my mom would have beat the hell out of us if she even thought it. But we had liquor all around the house.
Yeah.
But we never touched it. What we used to do was make fake ass drinks. You know, the mixer that tasted sweet that you mix with the rum or the vodka. We'd always drink that on ice, thinking that we were doing something, but we never really touched the alcohol.
Same,
it just tasted nasty.
I get like a ginger ale, you know, and think I was drinking the same drink my parents were and all that kind of stuff.
You know what? This just triggered something. I just realized when I was a kid, 5, 6, somewhere between 5 and 7. Growing up in Fifth Ward, there used to be cafes everywhere.
The Nickel?
The Nickel. The Bloody Nickel. It used to be cafes everywhere. So from our house, about 2 blocks away, there was a lounge, a cafe lounge called the Continental Club. And my grandmother, may she rest in heaven, I was her little man.
Yeah.
And so she watched me all day. And what she would do, she'd take me to the lounge with her.
Right.
She'd go down there and she drank beer. But if she drank hard liquor, she would become really violent.
Right.
But she would take me into the club. Everybody knew me. They gave me a nickname. I can't remember it, but they never called me Chris. They called me something else.
Right.
They used to call my grandmother Baby Lou. She would take me, sit me at the bar, have the bartender make me a drink. But the reason I remember this is because I had this love for pineapple juice. And what he would do, he mixed pineapple juice and ginger ale. And that would be my drinks. But in my mind, I was drinking a real adult drink like right. everybody else.
Yeah.
And I was a little man. And so imagine growing up in that setting where my grandmother takes me to the club. She lets me drink.
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm thinking like, I'm supposed to feel different. I'm a little man. I'm in the club with my grandmother. Yeah. And I didn't call her a grandmother. She was my mom. I just called her mama. And so in thinking about that now, I'm like, damn, do you know how easy that could have transitioned into, I want to take a real drink.
Yeah.
I want to know what this feels like. I want to know why everybody's always up in here all day.
Right.
They're in here obviously because they feel good. If it makes them feel good, I want to feel good.
Right.
And I think that's the slippery slope for kids when you start doing something just to, you know, be social.
Be cool.
And the next thing you know, you can't turn it off.
That's how smoking was, man. We started smoking because it was cool.
Wow. Know? So the first time you smoked, do you remember getting high?
Catching a buzz, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that's what you do first because you don't know if you're high. You're probably having a conversation with yourself like, am I high?
Well, no, sometimes I was smoking cigarettes.
Oh, cigarettes.
Cigarettes, yeah, yeah. That's how we started smoking cigarettes. It was like smoking cigarettes, it was to be cool, you know?
So what about the first time you smoked some butt?
First time I smoked weed, shit, I'm trying to remember the first time I smoked weed. Man, that was freshman year of high school, I think. Somewhere around there.
Damn, I didn't smoke weed till I was in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was like Barack Obama. I tried it, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't inhale, but yeah, I inhaled.
No, yeah. No, but like junior, senior high school, I mean, yeah, we were smoking every day.
Wow. Playing basketball?
Yep.
High?
Yep.
Were you still good?
Not as good.
Hey, listen. I didn't even know that was a thing until I came across one of my teammates in college. And he told me that every day before practice, he would go get baked, come out, ball out in practice. He'd be making these crazy, phenomenal-ass catches. And I'm thinking like, dude, I've never seen anybody do one hand. Like all the stuff that you see happening right now.
Right.
With Odell Beckham, the one hand catches and catching it between your legs and doing a somersault and all this shit and still catching the ball. This kid was doing this in college. And he used to do that shit in the game. And I never knew that he would do it because he was high.
Right.
When he took R. Kelly's I Believe I Can Fly to a whole different level. And I said, damn, man. Well, damn, I guess it made you, it enhanced you.
Oh, it didn't enhance me, that's for sure.
Slow. Okay, you remember the movie, I think this is going to be the storyline of the day. Movies that deal with substances and drinking.
Right.
You remember the movie Basketball Diaries?
Yeah.
With Leonardo?
Yeah.
That movie was crazy as hell.
Yeah.
So to think that somebody really went through that entire transition from if you guys have never seen the Basketball Diaries, it's one of Leonardo DiCaprio's first movies, and it's incredible. And it chronicles his life, starting off as a regular normal kid who's a basketball player at a private high school. He's really good. He's exceptional. And then he gets with his crew, and the majority of the crew love to drink and get high.
Right.
And then it progressively gets worse to where they start trying, what was it, heroin?
Or it's been so long since I've seen that movie.
It was either I think it had to be heroin, because cocaine wouldn't do you like it did him. He was like jonesing for this stuff, and he played this part to a T.
Right.
Because I really thought he really was on drugs. Because the makeup, the way he acted, it reminded me of people that lived in my neighborhood when I was growing up. They would act the exact same way. And so it culminated when this one guy, I can't remember his name, black guy in the movie, saves him. And he detoxes him in his apartment for like 3 or 4 days. So he goes through all the withdrawals. He's, you know, and that's the thing about detoxing. I've seen people detox in a jail cell.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen people detox in a damn closet.
Yep.
Somebody just locks them in a closet and gives them a bucket and say, piss in the bucket, shit in the bucket. And I'm going to talk to you in 3 days. I'm going to slide you some food in. And it seems terrifying, but it didn't kill him.
So that's the thing. So heroin detox, or any opiate detox, you might feel like you're going to die,
right,
but the chances of that are pretty low. The most dangerous detoxes are alcohol,
right,
and benzos. So
right, those are the only two things that can kill you.
That can
if you stop cold turkey.
Those detoxes can actually be fatal.
Wow.
So like again, when I worked at a sober living, you know, the guys that didn't have insurance that were detoxing and couldn't go see, you know, didn't have insurance to see a doctor or anything like that. Sometimes we give them a shot of vodka in the morning just so they wouldn't have a seizure, you know?
Right.
That kind of stuff. I mean, that's, you know, for those listening, I don't recommend that. Go get a, you know, see a medical facility. Right. Go do a proper medical detox. But, you know, that's how they used to do it, man. Like, give people a drink so they wouldn't get sick or get seizures and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Because that's the fear with an alcohol detox. You know, if you're that dependent on it, your body, you just shut it off from your body that quick, cold turkey. Yeah, you can seize up and all that kind of stuff.
Have a heart attack.
Yeah. Wow. So, like, for benzos, they try and do a taper and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, man, I mean, I've seen people on a heroin detox, and it doesn't look fucking fun. That's for damn sure. But
right.
Yeah, and you might feel like you're going to die, but the odds are you're probably not.
That's what was explained to me when I first got into this field, that those were the two things that could kill you. If you stop cold turkey and everything else, you're just going to feel so shitty.
Yeah.
But that's the work. That's the part you got to put in. And most people don't want to go through that idea, want to even think about that idea of going through all of that, being dope sick and weaning themselves off. And they don't want to go through that trauma. So they figure it's better for me to keep using than to experience that.
Well, it's like Suboxone now, too, man. I know people that, I mean, where I work, we use Suboxone for detox purpose only. We don't do a maintenance program.
Okay.
A lot of people will do what they call long-term tapers with Suboxone. But the problem with that is that it's kind of like substituting one for another, because you get hooked on the Suboxone.
Right.
And, you know, I know guys that Suboxone helped them get off dope, but now they're stuck on Suboxone, and they don't want to go through that Suboxone detox because apparently it's worse than a heroin detox.
Really?
Oh, man. It makes your bones hurt. Like they said, it's bad. So they'd rather just stay on the maintenance program with Suboxone than try and do that detox again.
What's an extreme amount for Suboxone?
So usually like 8 milligrams a day is usually the max that I've come across.
Okay.
That's most doctors will, you know, I've seen doctors write more. And, you know, anything over than that, in my opinion, you're not really... It's just substituting one for another, because Suboxone it will give you. I mean, it'll make you feel good. You know, if you like any other medicine, if you take too much of it, yeah, it's going to have an adverse effect.
Right. I mean, I brought in a guy. He was on 100 milligrams of Suboxone.
Damn.
And I said, let me even see if we can.
Yeah,
get this person admit it, because I've never.
That's a lot.
Been through that experience with someone where it was that high.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out who the hell is prescribing you this much. Who's writing scripts for
pill mills, man?
Yeah.
And that's we'd have guys come in and like, you know, oh well, I've got my own doctor for Suboxone. It's like, look, that's if you want to do Suboxone, you're gonna go see our doctor, because he studied addiction. We trust him, all that kind of stuff. And then we'd look at the, you know, their prescriptions from their quote unquote, you know, Suboxone doctors. And yeah, it'd be 32, 64 milligrams a day. And it's like, bro, that's not recovery, man.
Yeah.
You know,
you're just trading.
Right. And you know, it's same thing with dope. Like you go without it and you're hurting, you're itching, you know, all that shit. No, that's, yeah.
That's bananas. Like I said, sometimes you can just swap things instead of actually eradicating it or, you know, fighting through it and getting rid of it.
Right.
Some people just swap.
And the thing with like Suboxone and MATs and medically assisted treatment, like the landscape on that is very mixed, you know. A lot of people don't agree with MATs or Suboxone and, you know, aren't about it. They would rather do abstinence.
Right.
But, you know, and I mean, I've never been on Suboxone. I've never, you know, I've seen people take it and it's helped them. And I will say this, like, before we started using it at my previous place of employment, like, a lot of the younger guys, day two or three, when they try and quit cold turkey, get dope sick, burn off, go get high. Mm. Once we, you know, started doing Suboxone, they'd stick around and stay in treatment. And, you know, disagree with it or agree with it, if it keeps them sober and keeps them around and keeps them in treatment, whatever, that's their recovery. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
It's not, I don't think it's my place to pass judgment on that.
Right.
You know, I have my, you know, people have their opinions about it, but it's not my recovery. You know what I mean?
Right. And the Everyday Addict Show is a no stigma zone.
Right.
We don't attach stigmas to anything. If you have something that you're having an issue with and we could be of service to you, Ed or myself, it's just a call. It's just a text. It's just a tweet. It's just a,
there you go,
a DM.
Yeah.
You know, and seriously, because we're here to help at the
bro.
End of the day.
Totally.
And sometimes sharing these stories actually provides a platform for other people to feel comfortable enough to share their story and say, listen, I know someone is going through that. And it might be them, but they want to discreetly describe it in a way where they can get help as well.
Yeah.
And so it's like, listen, this is a judgment-free zone.
Oh, totally, man. Look, I mean, everything I've done, I'm in no position to pass judgment on.
Right.
You know, like, whatever. And that, I always tell that to people when I first talk to them on the phone. You know, before I even ask what got them where they are or whatever, why they're looking for treatment, you know, look, I'm in recovery myself. There's nothing you can say that I haven't said or done or tried myself.
Right.
You know, so there's no judgments, man.
And that's the killer thing. Sometimes when I have questions and I don't have an answer for certain things, I might call Ed because he's going to give me information based on his experience. And usually, 9 times out of 10, we'll have an answer. But sometimes you need more than just an answer.
Right.
You need someone that might have actually been through that. I've seen it secondhand because I'm around it, not experiencing any of that. I can still empathize with what's going on and the fact that you want to put your life back on the sober track. And my objective is to do that in every way, shape, or form. I mean, the business that we're the arena that we're in, yeah, it's commercial. It's commercialized. But we're both about the people. So we have relationships and strategic alliances and resources that allow us to have partnerships with people within the community that even if you don't have commercial insurance, we can still provide help for you.
Right.
So, and a lot of people sometimes, even, you know, what I found that happens more often than not is that there are professionals, there are attorneys, there are doctors, there are nurses that need to find resources and they can't.
Yeah.
You don't want to actually report to your human resources department that you have an addiction or you have this disease that you're fighting, and then they look at you differently and the judgment starts, and then you're worried about whether or not you're going to have a job at the end of the day.
Right.
So,
and technically, if you go to your HR department and let them know that you need help, they are not supposed to.
Right.
You know, that's technically so
true. You can go out on FMLA.
Right.
And enroll with one of our treatment programs.
Right. So if you are, you know, the hardest thing, dude, is because, look, I hate asking for help. I fucking hate it. And that's been my downfall a lot of times, even when it wasn't to deal with, you know, dealing with my addiction, just asking for help in general. Fuck that. Like, you know, like you it makes you vulnerable. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a shitty, like, you know, I don't like feeling vulnerable. Fuck that.
Right.
You know, and I'm a man, like, you know, I should be able to handle my own shit.
Right.
But, yeah, man, like, you know, but you learn the hard way, like, damn, if I just nutted up and asked my homeboys for help, I would have avoided this situation or the other. And, like, my best friends, you know, even when it wasn't about addiction, like, you know, bro, why didn't you just come ask for help, man? You
right.
know?
Like, right.
Shit, we would have loaned, you know, loaned you $20 or whatever. You know, whatever it was, man. So.
No, you're right. It's something funny that happened. And I ended up talking with a pastor at our local church. And I was explaining to him exactly what it is that we do. And he was saying, yeah, you know, I have a lot of patrons of the church that come, and they're in need of help, and we pray for them. And I had to be honest with the pastor. I said, listen, substance use disorders and alcoholism, you can't pray this away.
Right.
You cannot pray this away. You have to actually get professional help. And a lot of times people think even if you just detox, you're clean now. You're done.
No,
that's just the beginning.
Right. And like one thing, working for a detox now, one thing we are adamant about not doing is we just don't detox them and then cut them loose back into the wild. It's not catch and release like that.
Okay.
If you come in just to detox, we're going to make sure that you're, you know, connected with resources for your aftercare, whether it's IOP, counseling, groups, a sponsor, whatever.
Right.
And to go back to what we were saying about Suboxone and the judgments and all that kind of stuff, like 12 steps, you know, the AA program and NA program. That's helped a lot of people, man. And I think that's a very important component of recovery. I know meetings have been crucial for me, but I don't think that's the end all be all for
right.
to get sober. You know, but there are some people that insist, man, you don't need all that other shit. Just all you need to do is hit some meetings. And that might work for them, but
right.
I don't think it's fair for them to say to someone else that you're doing it wrong.
Right.
There's no right or wrong way to get sober. But that being said, man, I view it as, like, it's, we're going to throw as much as we can at it and see what sticks. And hopefully the more that sticks, the more it's going to help you.
Right.
So that would be, you know, counseling. That would be, you know,
the residential treatment,
the detox, right. the 12 steps, the
sober living,
all that, all of it, man.
All
the TMS treatments, you know, all throw as much as it at it as you can. And, you know, the more that sticks, the better. Because it's not, there's no right or wrong way to get sober is what I'm saying, basically.
Right. I think some people try to marginalize it, and they try to condense it down to, this is all you have to do.
Right.
And no, what works for Ed might not work for Chris.
Right.
What works for Chris might not work for Ed at all.
And there's a big difference between being sober and being in recovery, because I know people that are sober who are fucking miserable. I think recovery is about getting on with your life and, you know, living a happy, productive life. That's the way I see it.
That's perfect. Because some people look at it, you're either all in or all out.
Right.
And sometimes it's like, I'm managing this
right.
to build up to the point day for day I can get through the day.
Right.
But you're telling me I have to just chop everything off. And sometimes it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Or it's like, now I'm sober, but I'm a fucking miserable son of a bitch. I hate
everything.
You're
probably miserable to be around.
Yeah. And it's like, well, then, you know, okay, great, you're sober, but you're miserable. Like, you know, recovery is it's a lifestyle. I mean, you know, for a while I had to stop hanging out with certain people, man. But like,
I think that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
When you get your life back on track, the hardest part is not the treatment, it's not the detox. It's coming back to
life.
That proximity,
life.
That real, you're out of the bubble now.
Right.
You're back where you started from, and you got to deal with those people. And you might be in a toxic enabling relationship.
Yeah.
And that's the quickest way to go right back into that situation.
Yep.
You got someone who refused to get help, refused to get treatment, and you come back and you have all this clarity.
Yeah.
And you have this idea of, I'm going to get my life back together, I'm going to get a job, I'm going to do this. And then when things don't work out the way you want, the first thing you do, you self-deprecate, or you start beating yourself up in other ways. And then you have someone that's in your proximity that
right.
says, just come have a drink with me.
Or not even that, man. Like, family in general, like, other relationships, family, friends, those relationships, like, if I could make it mandatory for family members to go to Al-Anon or be involved in their loved one's treatment, because they are part of the sickness.
Right.
Whether they like it or not. you know, come across those family members like, well, it's not my disease, it's his or hers, you know. She's the one that needs to get treatment. It's like, no, but you've played a role in that. Like, you're a part of it, whether you like it or not. Those dynamics with family and friends play a role into it, you know.
A lot of people, you know what's funny? I don't think a lot of families see it that way.
Which is unfortunate because it's true, man. Codependency, I mean, all that stuff, dude.
That's like, crazy.
And like I've had to tell some parents, like, literally you are smothering your child to death. Like, you know, like the best thing my mom ever did for me was when I got out of TDC or Safe P, was draw that hard line, like, nope, you're not coming home for a night, you're not getting a dollar, you're not getting, like, nothing. And like I was fucking furious when she did it, but that was the best thing she ever could have done, was to draw that hard boundary and to maintain it. You know? Because a lot of family members, like, yeah, it's your child. It's hard to see, or it's your loved one. It's, you know, you don't want them to fail. You know, you don't want them to hurt or suffer. So you know, but you're enabling them at the same time, man.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you're not smothering with love or enabling, you know, you're being toxic or whatever, man.
You just brought up another scene from The Basketball Diaries when Leonardo was out getting high and he ran out of money and it was snowing outside and it was freezing. And he tried to come back home, and the mom had the door locked. And he wanted to get in, and she wouldn't let him in. She was blocking him from getting in the house.
Right.
And he was jonesing hard. He first started off pleading, begging, trying to get in. I just need some help. I just need $5. I need this. She didn't want to give it to him, probably because she didn't have it. But then he kept crying, drooling, spitting everywhere. He really played the hell out of this part, man, because right. I really thought he was like on drugs for real. Didn't really, I guess I was young enough to think that this was more of a documentary than a movie. So she, you could see in her face that it was hurting and tearing her up on the inside,
right,
to shut him out. This is my child.
Yeah.
I love you, but I gotta love you enough to shut you out.
Right.
And you gotta figure out how to get yourself back.
Right.
And it was a trip, man. It was surreal.
Yeah.
And I said, man, you would think this would be crazy until years later you would see this happen with family and friends.
Yeah.
And you don't know what they're going through, but you know it's something. But, you know, as an adult, as a father, as someone who works in the industry now, I can see all the telltales for the most part. I'm not going to say I'll be able to catch everyone, but I can see it for the most part. And I'm like, oh, man. You need help. Why aren't you asking me for help?
Right.
Let me inject myself into this equation.
Yeah.
And let me try to find you some help. But then you have to want that help.
Oh, yeah, man.
Because I can inject as much as I want, and interjecting usually might get you shut out.
Yeah.
And so you're like, damn, what do you do now?
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you know, speaking of stigmas, there's a big stigma that people with addictions or addicts are not, you know, we're smart, dude. We're a lot of times too smart for our own good. And that's one stigma, is that we're not. But we're smart and we're good manipulators. And
great.
I hate to say
that.
I would
say great.
I'm a fucking fantastic manipulator, and I hate to admit it, man. And I've used that to my advantage, you know, to get, you know, to work,
not
get over
true.
On people,
yeah.
You know, and it's usually get over on friends and loved ones, man. And I know how to, you know. If I create that opportunity or whatever, if there's a window open for opportunity, we're going to take it. And we're usually pretty good at creating that window with friends and loved ones. And
I agree.
My favorite thing is working with younger people who, you know, their tricks and manipulations work on friends and family, but we see it from a mile away.
Right.
It's like, no, bro. I wrote that book. Don't even, because I know what's next. And, you know, catch them off guard. And you're like, look, bro, come on. Don't bullshit a bullshitter. Like,
yeah.
Like I said, nothing I haven't said or done or tried myself, you know?
That's it's funny you use that analogy, because I always tell people, you can't hustle a hustler.
Right.
Because you're going to see it. You probably already did it, and you're looking to see the way you're working it. And
right.
Then you say, people really fall for that shit.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen people do this to like you said, they manipulate their mother, their brother, the sister,
right,
the father, until everybody gets tired of your shit.
Right. Or now, they don't catch on at all, and like, you know, that's part of the reason, like, families need to be involved in their
the
loved
process.
One's treatment in the process, because, you know, they might not even know. Like, it's, some of that shit is so, like, just deeply embedded in the dynamic of their relationship. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's just habit for them, and they're unable to recognize it. And if you're on the outside looking in, you know, especially when you've been working in the field or gone through it yourself, you can see it easily. And you're like, damn, like that is a toxic relationship right there. And it's not the intent of anyone, like, you know, like the loved one or the parent, brother, sister of the addict. Like, they're not intentionally, you know, playing into that toxic role, but that's just the way that that, you know, relationship has been for so long. Like, it's just habit at that point.
That is absolutely incredible. I mean, and you see it all the time. And the funny thing is, when you can see kids when they're toddlers, they learn manipulation without knowing that it's manipulation.
Right.
You can see the kids either favor one parent more, or they'll go from parent to parent to get what they want. Mommy, can I have some cookies? No, you can't have any cookies. But if I go ask dad, dad say, matter of fact, I want some cookies too.
Yeah,
let's go get some milk and cookies.
That's a good idea.
And then the mom walks in and sees the little kid at the table with the cookies, and he's like, she's like, you let him eat the cookies? I told him he couldn't have any cookies. He didn't even tell me he came to talk to you.
Yeah, why would he? Why would he?
So you learn that as a kid. So factor in that equation where now you need money for drugs, or you need money for alcohol or whatever, and you see it happen all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what's happening here, and sometimes the parent doesn't catch it.
Right.
They don't see it the way you see it.
Right.
And it's like, I think that's the crazy thing about having teenagers right now.
Yeah.
They think they're smart as hell.
Yeah.
But you've already seen that movie so many times. Like, I didn't see the movie. I shot the movie.
Yeah, but
I directed it.
Before we started recording today, you were talking about your kids and the difference between you and your wife, good cop, bad cop, and all that. So is your wife the one that they go to for the cookies?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So you're the you're the one saying hell no.
Oh yeah, my wife is the enabler, and she's gonna hear this, and I'm like, I don't care, and I'm like, you know what role you play.
We don't have to tell her that we dropped this episode. she'll skip it.
She'll hear it somewhere. She's like, were you talking about me on there? Probably so. Yeah, right. It's all good though.
That's my bad, Miss White.
Yeah.
So,
but that's crazy. Okay, another movie. I watched this movie the other day. It was called I Care a Lot. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. About the retirement homes or whatever.
Yeah. The hustle that goes with that.
That shit happens, though. That is,
if you guys haven't seen this movie, it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's called I Care a Lot.
Yep.
I hate calling him little guy, but the dwarf that was on Game of Thrones.
Oh, shit.
I can't remember his name.
With him, too, and he's got a... I know who you're talking about, though. Good actor.
Yeah, great actor. He plays this part. He's the gangster.
He's the mob boss.
He's the mob boss. And
but in the state of Massachusetts, that is real. They can, and I can't remember
Someone can become your caregiver.
Yeah.
And have total control of you and your assets.
Yes. In the state of Massachusetts. And I think it's another Netflix show. Not Rotten, but Bad Money or something like that.
Bad Money. It's a show
it's a docuseries.
Okay.
I think it's on that. But yes, in the state of Massachusetts and a handful of other states, they can, the courts can rule that you're incapable of taking care of yourself and assign you a caregiver. And these caregivers will just, they have control of all your shit.
Oh, man, that movie pissed me off.
Oh, yeah.
It pissed me off. Like, I started thinking because I have a mother-in-law that's aging. And I'm thinking, this is what the hell can go on if you're not in their life,
even if you are.
Yeah, and I said, I know for most of this is pure entertainment, but at the same time, you guys need to see the movie.
Yeah,
it's called I Care a Lot.
Yeah,
but the big movie that really, really like kicked me in the nuts.
I know what you're about to say too.
Oh my God,
Body Brokers.
Body Brokers.
Yeah.
Got my boy Omar in there from The Wire.
Yep.
Oh, man. It just made this whole arena look crazy.
Keenan Michael Williams or?
It's Michael Williams.
Michael Williams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But y'all going to remember him as Omar from The Wire.
Omar.
Yeah, just know that.
Yo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, this movie is bananas, and it talks about the industry of addiction treatment and recovery, and it's how it's a built-in ecosystem.
Right.
What's the family that's being sued right now that created the opioid crisis?
Oh, Purdue?
It's the Purdue family?
Yeah, or they own Purdue Pharma, but I don't know if it's the Purdue family, but yeah.
Now, these people made freaking trillions of dollars on something that they knew had the most addictive properties in the world, on the planet.
Yeah.
And they pushed it with incentives.
Yeah.
The more you sell, the more you make. The more you write scripts for, the more you make. And I saw this show called Claws.
Yeah.
And Claws dealt with a pain clinic in Florida. But you go to Florida, and they're everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
They're pain clinics, pain mills everywhere. All they do is write scripts, have people sign up, then they go take the pills and flip them and do all this crazy shit, right?
Yeah.
So when I saw this, I said, damn, man, you know what? All of this works hand in hand with one another.
Right. And if you get a chance, check out Body Brokers. And I will say, man, because Chris was texting me after he watched it, and you know, then I watched it, and I told him, I was like, man, dude, that shit happens, unfortunately. Like, it's an unfortunate reality of the substance abuse and, you know, addiction treatment field, that shit happens. Body brokering, and there's, you know, the government's cracking down with laws about what they call patient brokering and all that kind of stuff.
But right.
It's a system, once you factor in commercial insurance, that is can easily be incentivized for a lot of gray area and kickbacks and things like that. And man, it happens, dude. It happens.
I think I've talked to about 10 to 15 of our associates in this arena, and they've seen it. Oh man, they're livid.
It's true, man. I've seen it firsthand, bro.
Wow.
I've seen the kickbacks and all that, and you know, yeah, I'll get you someone to detox, and I know that you're going to bill their insurance X amount of dollars, and you know, what do I get of that for getting you that, you know? I mean, it's the clients are seen as commodities. The clients and their insurances are seen as commodities.
I think what drove that home for me was watching 50 clients in one room, and they were doing a valuation of that room.
Right.
Each client being worth 300 grand.
Right.
I said, damn, 300 grand per client. There's 50 people in this room. And in 30 days, there's going to be another 50 people.
Right.
And I said, okay, for the most part, I know this is entertainment, but if you work in this arena, you will see certain things
that
remind you of this movie.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh man, I hope they don't think or that you've we're been all in that, like that.
Been in, right. That's the thing, man. You're like, man, and I hate to say it, like, that movie is based on true events, and like, it's that atmosphere came about with Florida and Southern California. Like, those are the two demographics that do that the most. And man, yeah, like I said, I've seen that shit firsthand, dude. They're handshake, backroom deals, and you know,
incredible.
Mean, you've got a sober living with X amount of people, and you know, I need, you know, beds filled or whatever, and yeah, shit. You know, I'll give you, it's kickbacks is all it is. It's all about kickbacks.
Yeah.
And the thing is too, though, that I will say that happens outside of our field.
Right.
I think anytime these days, unfortunately, when you're dealing with commercial insurance, that happens a lot. Like, I was listening to a deal about the dialysis industry. That happens a lot. And that, like, you know, commercial insurance, bro, it's just how it is, man.
You see when, you know, you hear about these people getting this Medicaid fraud cases.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, wait a minute, how the hell did you defraud Medicaid of $822 million? I don't understand that.
So I was watching a thing on John Oliver the last week tonight, his latest episode, like, elderly care. You know, that's Medicaid, and they bill, it's a bill for service, you know? And they were talking, like, some people, like, the day before they died, when they're on hospice, they're billing them for this treatment, this treatment, this treatment, and this treatment.
Oh, they're trying to cash out.
Yeah, so they're just saying that they provided these services and billing for them. It's like, you know,
how are you going to refute it if you're dying?
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy,
so,
man.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, that's just the I mean, it's not specific to our industry, or it's not, But our industry does, I mean, it does happen in our industry. And that's the thing. Is it human nature? Like, you know, or is that, hey, look, there's opportunity and there's some, you know. And I think everyone gets into this field. Yes, we work in a business, like, you know. But we're in the business to help people. But also, yeah, people got to make a living out of it.
Right.
But there's enough to go around, man. You can still help people and make a good living without having to do the crooked shit, too.
Exactly.
But it's so easy, too. Like, look, it's just you and I in a room. I've got, you know, the patients. You're billing the insurance. Who's going to know that we made a deal, you know? Shit.
Incredible. I'm glad we don't participate in anything like that.
Me neither.
So that's why...
That's why we're trying to make a podcast for a little money, you know? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Okay. But the crazy thing I tell people all the time, and, you know, me and Ed both agree to this, is that we work in this industry, but at the end of the day, we're about the people.
Right.
So if you come to us as a resource, we're going to help you across the board. If we can point you in the right direction, if we can introduce you to, say, a company like what's the company in Deer Park? They work with the indigent, where you don't have to come out of any money out of pocket. I can't.
What, Matthew's Hope?
No, not Matthew's Hope. That's in St. Joseph's.
Okay.
But over in Deer Park, they have a facility for men.
Oh, shit.
I can't think of the name of it right now.
Centicor.
No, not Centicor.
Okay.
No, this is a free of charge to people who don't have insurance or they do not have the money to go get the treatment services that our respective companies provide.
You got me.
So, but there are a number of resources out here, and for the most part, you come to Ed or I, we're the common denominators in a lot of situations, and we can point you in the right direction. Right.
Even so, if it's not with our facility, we're going to make sure you get where you need to go.
Exactly.
Or we know someone that can help you, you know, with the resources you have or provide those, you know.
Right. And that's men or women. And just so you guys know, I'm going to give a generic number that we have, that if you want to call in and you want to talk to Ed or you want to talk to myself or you want to speak with one of us to find out about any services that can be rendered, the number is 713-487-7433. You can call. You can ask for Ed. You can ask for myself. We're going to eventually gravitate to an entirely new number specifically for the Everyday Addict and Addiction Never Sleeps. And that way you can call and get information regarding any of the resources that we're able to provide.
Right.
But that's the number that you can call in to talk to us or if you just need some help.
Right.
Period. 713-487-7433. 713-487-7433. Ask for Ed, ask for Chris. If you're looking for Ed, I'm gonna forward you to Ed. If you're looking for Chris, I'm gonna forward you to Chris.
There you go.
So I love doing these podcasts because a lot of the time people don't know where to go.
Right.
They don't know who to talk to.
Yeah.
And once they find out it's you,
talking to someone.
Or they're nervous.
Yeah.
But we both put people at ease. We're comfortable in any setting. And if you just even need to talk, we're
for real.
Here.
For real.
If you like to call in and be a part of the show, feel free.
Come on.
We usually shoot this once a week, but we're getting to the point where we're going to be able to shoot this at least 3 or 4 times a week. So you'll be able to get with us whenever you need to. We're at your disposal. But one last movie.
Go for it.
This is an 80s movie.
Less than Zero.
Yes.
Oh, there it is, man. I love that movie.
Less than... Dog, you talk about... Hey, man, you know this was a white boy movie, right?
Yeah, yeah. Privileged, how do you think I do?
Privileged white kids.
Look.
This dude had a Porsche and as a senior in high school.
Yeah.
They're doing coke as seniors in high school at the... What was it? The prom?
Yeah, something like that. Okay. L.A. back in the 80s, man. Like,
so who's one of the stars of the movie?
Robert Downey Jr.
Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man was in there getting lit up.
Yep.
And it spiraled out of control really fast. This is the era when it wasn't crack. It was called bass.
Bass.
And it was free basing.
Bass. Yeah.
And, oh, man.
But that, like...
It's crazy. You think it's a movie. You think, you know what? Every movie is based off something real. So that came from a real place.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, Robert Downey Jr., look how, you know...
Bro,
look how that turned out for him.
That is crazy. So,
and that goes to show you, like, someone like him who's got, you know, all the talent, money, resources in the world, man. Like, shit happens, bro.
It happens. It happens. Okay, the next episode, we're going to have to talk about all of these celebrities.
Right. We didn't even get to DUIs and DWIs.
No, we didn't. We got to. Oh, man.
That's the thing, man. So I got bad ADD. I don't know about Chris, but.
I just go with the flow of the conversation because, hey, this conversation can go 50 different ways real quick. So one little, hey, check this out, can change the whole scope of the conversation.
Exactly. Here's what I will say about DWIs and DUIs.
Okay.
I admittedly should not have, you know, I deserved mine. I shouldn't have drank and drive. But if you're, nowadays, man, there's no excuse. Take Uber, Lyft, whatever, man. Trust me, it's cheaper to take an Uber or a Lyft now than fuck with the jail and tickets and probation and all the fines and all that if you, you know, gamble and lose. Get behind the wheel. That's all I'll say about that.
And that's what Ed has to close with. I'm your boy, Chris White. That's Ed Manderson.
What's up?
This is the Everyday Addict.
The thing that is the worst thing about you can become the best thing about you. The thing that is the worst thing about you can become the best thing about you. The thing that is the worst thing about you can become the best thing about you.
Do you hear that?
The thing that is the worst thing
about you can become the best thing about you. And we're going to end it on that note because it is time.
I still call myself an addict.
To get out of here.
And that's because I will always be an addict. I have no choice. That is forever.
That's what the real question
in
addiction
is. Every day I get to choose whether I'm in recovery.
Addiction, but why if you want to understand addiction, you can't look at what's wrong with the addiction. You have to look at what's right about it.
Addicts aren't like everybody else. We use all the time or we can't use it all. So we have to do recovery the same way, every single day.
There's many, many addictions. Yes, there's the addiction to drugs, but there's also the addiction to consumerism. There's the addiction to sex, to the internet, to shopping, to food.
And that's the thing about addicts. If you are an addict and you are struggling, you are not alone. You are not alone.